Well, this morning we have a very serious discussion, and I hope that we can put a few ideas across that will be helpful in the future. At the present time, we have a world narcotic problem in which cocaine and heroin and marijuana are now acknowledged to be out of control. In other words, there isn't enough agencies, there are not enough operators to curb this situation. And there are all kinds of attitudes as to what we're going to do about it. What people don't seem to realize is that these addictions are, we might say, to the physical body of society. But they are the direct result of three other powerful narcotics that we don't hear anything about. These narcotics are habit-forming and will ultimately be fatal to individuals, nations, and the world. And these habit-forming drugs on the psychological level are wealth, fame, and fun. We are living for nothing else but. We are losing sight entirely of the seriousness of the problems which we face. We are looking forward with great hope to a new way of life for all of us. We want to see that the various climatic conditions through which we have recently passed are proofs that we're coming through to something better. I'm inclined to favor this, but I think the problem is bigger than the average individual realizes. In the first place, a lot of people still believe that these problems, or this major problem, can be legislated. That laws can be passed by means of which certain excesses will be curbed. Actually, laws have been passed on every subject, and the lawbreaker is better off than ever before. We cannot do it by law. We have to do it by individual integrity. The only way out of the present dilemma is that citizens in their personal lives will begin to live the things they talk about and the things they believe and the things they would like to hear legislated. We are at the present time in a condition in which we are becoming aware of some of the perils that we face. We are in the presence of a mass of exposures in which persons trusted with various responsibility have been proved unworthy. We are faced constantly with the catastrophes of international relationships. We are still hoping that politics will take care of the situation. But unless politics is supported by the private citizen, it will not. And the things which politics will do of its own accord will help very, very little. We must begin to recognize that all of these major changes depend upon individuals voluntarily assuming programs of self-discipline. We've got to improve our personal way of life. We have got to stand against policies which we do not believe to be correct. To do this is going to be expensive. The average person is living beyond the world's means. He is living on a higher level than humanity as a whole can maintain. We are living to exhaust our natural resources with no thought of what we will do when they were gone. We hope, however, that someone will invent a substitute for anything we run short of. This is also more or less a forlorn hope, because we're gradually running short of everything. We are on a little ball floating in space. This little ball is a bottle, 8,000 miles in diameter. And beneath its surface, on its surface, and the air above its surface are all the values which we need to endure. We are not protecting these values. We are exploiting them to the last nickel. We want to cut down nothing that interferes with luxury. And as the old Greek philosopher said, if you want to curse your son, say to him, I hope you live in luxury. This is our problem. We are building more cars and the roads won't take care of the ones we have. Everything is becoming more so. Cities that were supposed to hold 500,000 now have 5 or 10 million inhabitants. Everything is being accelerated except solution. And solution is left to heaven by people who don't even believe in God. This is very serious situation. Something that has to be given a lot of consideration. Now, we are all here on a temporary passport. From here to there, we all go. And whatever we do here is of no value to us there unless it has done something to make us better people. The afterlife, as from Egypt, Greece, and all ancient nations, was a sphere of rewards. Good rewarding good, ill rewarding ill. So we can take nothing with us but our integrities, and we are going to many travel light on that basis. So, if we want to solve these problems and make this peace a reality that we hope for, individuals have got to make sacrifices. They must make dedications and keep them. They must conserve resources. They must restrict expenditures. Now, they say that if we do these things, it will result in economic bankruptcy. Too late. We're there already. But if we want to put what we can into the building of a new way of life, we will realize that all of these ills were the result of our own basic wrong thinking. This world was given to us to use. We've abused it. It was given as a place of learning, and we have rejected learning on every possible count. We were told that we are able to live in this garden as stewards and servants of an eternal principle. We have changed the whole thing, paved the garden, and sold it as condominiums. We have done everything we could to destroy the planet on which we live. We have wrapped it in a tirade of wars. We have given every consideration to armed and military progress, and very little to peace. All of these situations arise from a personal ambition or avarice. They arise from the concept that wealth is secure. The recent debacle on the stock market might help a little bit to recognize that this is not true. We are looking for truths, and we do not find these truths in the social system which we are desperately attempting to maintain. And in order to maintain it, we are now forced to gradually weed out the few truths that we did leave and discard them because they appear to interfere with the correction of the situation. So, we are now right down to the point, do we want peace? Do we really want to have a world at peace? Or do we want to have an arbitration of violence in which each individual can settle down and exploit his neighbor without any probability of redress? Are we willing to make the changes that are necessary? We talk today, as we have not for 50 years, on the importance of the teachings of Jesus. We are also very convinced that the brotherhood of humanity is possible. Yet we make no dynamic effort. We talk about it, we write about it, we listen to it, but if it costs money, we are not present at that moment. We don't want to sacrifice anything. We want a world of peace in which everybody is rich. Well, the world wasn't built that way. Wealth was a human institution. The universe gave us what we need. And we have spent thousands of years trying to transform that into what we want. And our wants continue to grow, and the materials to satisfy them continue to diminish. We are confronted by a crisis that will certainly be faced within the next 10 or 15 years. We are gradually building toward a recognition that we have abused and misused each other, the world in which we live, and the teachings that have been given to us to help us straighten out the mess. Everywhere, avarice has interfered with principles. The hope of fame has dominated the desire to live an honorable life. And the young people growing up in an uncontrolled society have decided there's nothing to look forward to, so let's have fun today and die tomorrow. This type of thinking is never going to be a solution, and no election can correct it. The correction lies directly with us. We must begin to recognize the difference between use and waste. We must realize that in a world in the condition this one is in, we cannot have 3 or 4 automobiles in one family. We cannot continue to expand and expend. We must gradually get to the point where we cooperate for decent survival. Now, we're not going into politics. That is not my field. But I would like to hope that if people become intelligent, their politicians will inevitably improve. We will also be able to select some enlightened people for public office. But we cannot do that so long as they can bribe their way into practically any state they wish. Nobody seems to interfere as long as the process does not interfere with the individual himself. And when he is interfered with, a great hue and cry goes up, but nothing changes. So I'm suggesting a very serious point in connection with the next 15 or 20 years. We see around us the arising of a new order of life. We see more people than ever, certainly in my lifetime, has ever seen before, trying to do something to solve things. There are people in every business, every walk of life, who believe in better principles. Wherever such people exist, we have to help them. We have to cooperate with their principles. And we must try to find ways to make sure that these individuals are not abused and misused for the profit of someone else. Actually, we have a series of adjustments. We have in our heads a thing called the brain. We have in our bodies a thing called the heart. These two have got to work together in a cooperative for the first time. A few individuals have achieved this union, but not many. Those who have achieved it, we regard as the great heroes of life, but we do not emulate them. We respect them, we admire them, we read about them, and we ignore them. We ignore the message that they bring. Well, now we can start with our own little problems. We all want to be better people. We all want to improve social conditions. We would like to overcome poverty and vice. We would like to have young people something to live for, better than rock music. We'd like something that shows progress. The most advanced culture the world has ever known, scientifically and industrially, is falling apart morally, and its ethics are becoming more and more dubious. We must rescue the world before we permit negative factors to take over. If we do let this happen, the retribution of universal law is bound to be very heavy. We want to get in line with the facts. We want to live according to the law and not against it. And when I say law, I do not mean man-made law. I mean divine law. And all human law that is important is based upon divine law. When it departs from divine law, it departs from its own ethics. It denies its own purpose, and it destroys its own objectives. So we are now looking to see what we can do as individuals. One thing we can do is look over our own economic and social position. What are we doing with the money that we have? Are we doing anything to help society, or are we wasting it on fun and having no fun? We go home from the great fun adventure to a condition that is not pleasant in any sense of the word. The individual should learn to live moderately so that he can succeed in being a comfortable and secure person. Poverty is insecure. Great wealth is insecure. Between these two is moderation. And Socrates said, in all things, not too much. We have too much poverty and too much wealth, and they're not properly balanced in the correction of an economic system. Now, if we look at this little planet going on through space, and we are captives on it, each generation that comes and goes is floating through space on this little ball. None of the past generations are still with us. The future is still unborn. And here we go, floating along in space on a very definitely limited planet. We are not on a planet that can fulfill everything. Our leaders in various fields tell us we don't need to have a planet that fulfills everything, because we can create devices by means of which we can take care of the erosions that are taking place in our natural resources. In other words, we're going to invent something when everything else fails. When the oil gives out, we're going to invent something else. When the electricity is exhausted, we'll do something about that. When we have no more wood, we'll do something about that. We're always going to do something to clear up smog, to clear out various forms of refuse which we do not know what to do with. All these things are sort of trying to take care of themselves. As a matter of fact, they're not taking care of themselves, and those appointed to do it don't know what to do about it either. Each individual must do what he can to reduce the burden of his own attitudes and appetites and ambitions upon the planet in which he lives. We have only a comparatively small sphere. We are already populating up to 6 billion, and we will continue. But it's fortunate that the planet itself is well able to take care of it, but is not able to take care of it if everybody fulfills all their selfish desires. We cannot make a planet in which 6 or 7 billion people all have everything, because it wasn't intended that for. We are here on trial. We are here, in a sense, being initiated into the mysteries of life. This planet is a kind of esoteric school where we learn to grow, where we learn to become better human beings, where we pass tests instead of flunking them. We have failed to provide the necessities for protecting our only physical home, right here. Our education is not teaching the young to protect natural resources. It is not instructing those of somewhat older years in the proper administration of employment. It is not giving any instruction to those who are trying fervently to end the destructiveness of militarism. And it is doing nothing to accomplish the prevention of crime. And the whole theory of punishing the misdeed is not the solution. The solution is to cause a better level of life by which we do not have these misdeeds that we must get over all the time. We look around and see what is happening. We read the daily paper. I read a little bit at least every day, all I can stand. And as a result of that, it becomes evident that almost everything we don't like is flourishing. Everything we know is wrong is increasing in importance. Governments are in trouble. Leaders are in trouble. Everyone is in trouble. But for some mysterious reason or way, the average person simply settles back and is sure it cannot happen to him. No matter what happens, he will be able to maintain the fallacies which have dominated his life. We are going to finally find out that salvation is not a collective experience. It is not something that is dropped from heaven. Salvation must be earned. The word salary comes from the same root as salvation, which means salt. And the salt of the earth in ancient times was the symbol of the wise, the knowing ones, the ones who could take common experience and give that experience a certain flavor by which it became acceptable to millions of people. So we are now in the condition where we have to begin to practice some of the virtues necessary to an individual or a family living in a highly restricted area, the planet Earth. We are here and we hope to remain for the present, but nature is a very vulnerable and mysterious creature. And one of the things we're gradually discovering about nature is that our thinking has a lot to do with what happens. The individuals who group together to maintain a situation add a mental definitive to it, by means of which we can precipitate things. If we think bad enough, we can get in more trouble. If we think a little better, we can relieve ourselves of some of our difficulties. We've got to learn to think straight, live straight, believe in the truth, and stand up for what we know to be principles. And the time is now. Also, it is encouraging, very encouraging, to realize that a great many people think the same way. And little by little, there are groups rising up all over the world determined to end this riot of dissipation through which we have passed, and especially the last 50 years. It's in the last 50 years our troubles have multiplied, our skills have increased, our population has grown, and our ethics have fallen apart. This is one of the things that we've got to work on. Now, we've got people who are trying to put together a program for helping this situation. But they are also in difficulties. The moment they try to do something, somebody rises up and says, who's going to make profit off of this? We're going to raise these funds, but why don't we just divide them among ourselves? This is the type of thinking we are using every day. The purposes for which we are trying to gather our resources are not receiving the strength that we intended them to attain through our cooperation. We've got to begin to demand integrities. We have to have the gumption to turn away from that which is dishonorable. And we have to teach our children the same thing. And we have to go out into various streams of business, and if the job demands dishonesty, we've got to look for another job. If it's expected to waste, if our children have gradually been taught to be spendthrifts, we've got to re-educate them. The time is to prepare, if possible, for what has been anciently prophesied, namely that by the end of the present century, the Great Reformation will take place. Nostradamus told us that after the end of this century, the Paraclete, or the Prince of Peace, would come. So we have to prepare an appropriate environment for peace. We have to be ready to accept brotherhood, love, friendship, and kindness as the basic principles of our relationships. Up to now, for a long time, they've not even been considered. Individuals who have tried hard have been badly hurt, and for the majority, the condition has remained the same. But now, if we want this peace, if we want to be ready for it, if we want to stand prepared to live in a better world, let us think for a minute what that world might be like. Remember, that world isn't something in which we can exploit the natural resources. There is talk about trying to colonize another planet, but I think we need more consideration for colonizing this one with the right kind of people. We cannot depend upon mysteries of this nature. If they could be depended on, the moral and ethical value of humanity would be lost. Humanity is here to grow. And to grow means to mature, to have greater and higher, nobler, and more permanent aspirations, to learn the lessons of life. The ancients had their mysteries, institutions in which they admitted the worthy with certain probationship and testing and trial in order to fit themselves for higher responsibilities. In the last analysis, this world is a mystery school. It is a school in which we are here in order to pass an examination. And it makes no difference what happens to anyone else in the sense of it affecting us. The examination for us is for us, and we are the ones who must meet it. And each individual who wishes to be part of a better way of life must make a definite contribution toward that end. So we are here to grow and to get ready for another century. And there are indications, there are landmarks, there are indications definitely that people are getting together to do this. They are trying. They are working together. They are in trouble because they do not have any background of experience to work from. Most of those who are now trying to do it better had no help for doing it better except the misfortunes in their own lives. Some of them have gotten tired of misery, gotten tired of jealousy, hates, gotten tired of superficial living that ends in nothing but intoxication and death. People out of their own sorrows are beginning to grow towards the realization that this world was a beautiful place until we ruined it, and that we've got to restore it before we can ask for the grace of God. We've got to get this world into a condition that we can make it an offering to God instead of allowing it to fall to pieces as a result of our own ignorance. So each person must now begin to think about developing value. One way to develop value, is to be exposed to it. And there must be major changes in education. We can demand those changes and get them. All we have to do is stand together. But what happens? When we get together to make changes of this kind, one group says do that, another group says don't do that, and a third group says let it alone. There are people who feel that the information they are getting now is what they want. So they get it and die. What they want brings them to bankruptcy, but they don't want to change. They do not want to alter the rules for fear that they will be penalized, that they won't have quite the same chance for wealth and fame and fun as the individual who keeps the rules as they are and dies in early life as a narcotic addict. So to get education on its feet is not an easy problem. It must be faced with the realization that a basic of education must be found. It must be found in a way that does not hurt anyone. It must be of common agreement. Now we have in the world, for example, today, 8 fairly major world religions, and we have a couple of dozen smaller ones. The only thing that these religions have found that they more or less all accept is the Golden Rule. They all believe in the Golden Rule. You find it in Chinese, and you'll find it in the Balinese calendars, you'll find it among the American Indians, and you'll find it among the Eskimos. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now this is a common acceptance. It would be very hard to find anyone who would make a big argument against it. But no one is doing anything to bring it home to young people starting out in life. It is considered religious interference with the political right to destroy the country. We do not want to have anything interfere with a smug situation. We don't have to interfere with it. It's falling apart itself. But no one seems to want to admit this. But with certain amount of ethics given to the young, we can prevent their children from being in the same jam that they are themselves in at the present time. We have got to build an ethic that is commonly acceptable. And having built it, we've got to live it. If we want to live by the Golden Rule, we must grant the right to do unto others only that which we would have them do unto us. Now, it may not be the same type of transaction, but the moral values must be consistent. If we realize this firmly and directly, we will have a much easier time working with young people. Now, there is a move in the educational world as a result of pan-educational relationships. We are becoming more and more aware of the religious systems of other countries, other religions, and other beliefs. Little by little, we are being exposed to the fact that there is not just one small circle of salvation and the rest is all headed for damnation. We are beginning to even accept the fact that some other religions might not be too bad. We must become aware of the fact that religions have a part to play in this, and every culture, including the present, that has outlawed them has been in trouble. Now, it may be that somebody's religion doesn't please somebody else. The main question isn't who it pleases. It is the question as what type of belief helps the individual to be a better person. This is the primary consideration, is the spiritual support to moral ethics. We need to have all the support we can get. And if the belief in God gives us that support, we have a right to it. And if we do have it, no one has a right to question it. But we have no right to force other people to our beliefs. This has been one of the great problems in religion, is its constant effort to proselyte, in which each religion has gone actually into a holy war, trying to convert some other religion. In the nature, this is all very foolish. In the great vista of those stars that go on beyond the scope of human imagination, who knows who is what? All we know is that a divine law governs all things, and it is a good plan for us to find out what that law is and administer it rather than contradicting each other as to what it means. So religion is important in this. It is very important to young people, because at the present time, young people have nothing right to do. To gather night after night to listen to hard rock is not worthy of the human being. It is also medically dangerous. It is a mistake all the way through. And yet these young people will probably be martyrs rather than to permit it to change. They want to do it their way, because they do not know anything better to do. They see what their ancestors have done and don't like that. They fear what someone in the future might do and they don't like that. So at the present moment, they are destroying themselves to escape the past and the future. We need something from these young people. After all, they are our successors. They are the ones who must take care of things when we're gone. And it's going to be very difficult to run this world with a rock concert. We're going to have to do better than that. We also have to find a way of educating young people so that if responsibilities are offered to them, they know how to accept them. At the present time, no growth is regarded as necessary because computers are going to run the world. We're all going to do nothing but listen to the computer. Then we will be very, very definitely at the end of our possibilities of human civilization. Because if the computer goes far enough, it is a scientific discovery. If it goes far enough, it is going to finally end up in ethics, because the universe is. Before it's over, the computer will have to teach us to live straight, even though it may be a hard lesson and a long time coming. Because computers have to be correct mathematically and scientifically, or they don't work. And anything that is correct scientifically and mathematically and works participates in a divine plan. Otherwise, it couldn't exist. So we have the problem of these young people. There's no jobs for them. The kindly older generation has thrown unemployment in the face of millions. There is no cooperation, there is no tenderness, there is no thoughtfulness. All of it goes back to that one foundation, profit. And profit in this case is not profit as in the form of a wise man. It is a quick money deal. So actually, it's up to us. We've either got to straighten out or we're going to be in trouble. And this trouble can be very fatal, because the mental and emotional attitudes of peoples, the wars they fight, the depressions they cause, the strikes that they advance, all of these things are part of nature's vibratory field. And if we keep on thinking crazy, as we are now, we will have a great rash of earthquakes, and we will have one tidal wave after another and one storm after another, in an effort to clear the atmosphere of the material we are putting into it. We are filled with smog, we are overloaded with everything you can think of, and we go along without even a thought of the consequences. even though these conditions are shortening our own life expectancy, that's the way it is, anything rather than become an unselfish, intelligent human being. That's just too much to ask. We've been taught out of that. So we're going to have to pay according to what we have taught ourselves by ignoring natural law. We have today also a very grave problem that involves various types of health. Health is a very important thing. Health is a planet can be sick. The solar system can be sick. Little worms can be sick. Everything that exists can be sick if its proper regime is destroyed. A planet can be so ill that it will give us another mass of plagues. We've had one civilization after another shaken from our backs already. We can have all kinds of troubles arising from mass concentration of negative, destructive thinking. And we can be destroyed not because the thinking is nasty, but because it is selfish, self-centered, and ambitious, without any basic integrities to protect it. So we have to kind of think in terms of health. We know from the medical researches of today that many of the ailments that we all suffer from are due primarily to pollution in the air, adulteration in the food, and the definite effort to make things more palatable and less useful. Also, the great problem of profit. Behind nearly every state that we know, every condition we create, is the factor of profit. We don't need that right now. Because what are we going to do with it? So, supposing we do make a few million. Well, isn't that a pleasant thought? Within control, if we've earned it. But what do we actually have? We have something, and the first time we get a bad infection, we may have nothing. We can't take it with us. Most of our descendants are hardly good recipients. We don't know what to do with it, so we give it to something else in the hope they'll do better with it. But we have put such restraints on that other thing that it can't function either. So we have a tremendous grasp of wealth. We've practically become convulsive when we hear of some of the salaries that are granted. Way out of proportion to value. But we don't do anything to change the pattern except hope that we'll be one of those that gets the salary someday. If we could only become a little more like we were. I can remember back, quite a ways now, I can remember back to the time when people had homes, that they took care of their elders. Nobody with a family expected an elder to go into a retirement home. And as a result of that, they had a very useful elder who helped them in everything that they needed to do. I know several cases now in which families are being held together by an elder. I know now why some of these people are respected and honored. But now what we want is freedom. We want fun. Responsibility detracts from fun. We don't care how the person you take away from the home is going to feel about it. That's their business. We want no responsibilities. And then not having any responsibilities, we suddenly find that we are restricted. We suffer as the result of our effort to gain freedom. I know several instances in which an elder is now holding together an entire family and giving them freedoms and privileges they could never have otherwise. That was the way it was when we started out in life, but it's now become almost inevitable. They've got to put anybody who isn't right up on top someplace so we don't have to watch them all the time. This type of thinking is part of a tremendous fun move. Now, what is fun? Well, fun is a very difficult word to analyze. If we think it means humor, we have it every night in television, and it's pretty bad. If by humor we mean editorials, most of them are depending on sarcasm for their popularity. We are not having any fun. That's the trouble. We are spending vast amounts of money for alcohol and try to drive home intoxicated, have an accident, and have an enormous lawsuit on our hands. Why should we do these things? We know they happen. We read them in the paper every day. Yet we keep on doing just the same thing. We know that our narcotics addict is a very poor candidate for recovery, that it'll be very difficult to get some of them where they can even be useful anymore. And yet nobody does anything about it. Free country, if you want to become an addict, you become an addict. And now the various bureaus and boards trying to control the situation have come to the conclusion that they can't control it. No one can control narcotics unless it's the people who buy it. And if we stopped buying it, there wouldn't be any narcotic traffic. But too many people, particularly younger people, do not realize that they are the ones that are causing the problem and not the merchant. There is no narcotics addiction to the individual who won't buy it. But we haven't taught them not to buy it, or perhaps we have not given them any opportunity to do something more interesting. With a bit of heroin or cocaine, they feel 6 or 10 feet high. They have a high and a low. And this situation is a complete illusion, a delusion. Why are not these young people doing things that are meaningful? Why are they not having fun out of growing, out of becoming better people and making a better world? Nobody gets around to doing it. So now we're coming to the end of an old cycle. We're coming to an end of it because it's falling apart, not that we're basically trying to solve it. But in the emergency, we are beginning to think. In the emergency, we are beginning to realize that things must change. And an off-order of change is coming. There is today more growth in the fields of religion, philosophy, idealism, and mysticism than ever before in recorded history. People want to grow. They want to be better. And they are studying to be better. But unfortunately, they have not realize that they must change themselves. It isn't the class they attend or the book they read. It is what they themselves do to change their own dispositions. There is no reason to hope that any intellectualism apart from labor can ever help to cure this situation. The individual who wants to make a better world has got to be a better person to start with. He's got to start in by understanding life and recognizing his own faults and his own delinquencies and get out and cooperate constructively with other people who are going somewhere. Now, in this struggle to try to find some solutions, we're getting some pretty woolly ones. And some of these solutions will probably fall apart also. But at the least point of view, they are efforts. And now we've got to help them to build a solid substance under the effort to grow. We've got to help them to find the truths about things. We've got to have them realize that growth is a private, personal problem. And if several people come together to try to grow together, they may do so in fraternity, but each has got to do his own living. He's got to do his own thinking. He's got to make his own corrections with life. He's going to have to find ways to cut down the divorce rate. He's going to have to find ways to improve morality and social life. And in all these matters, improvement begins with himself. Until he grows, until he becomes better, there is no actual change. There is talk, there's discussion, there's publication of books, there's magazine articles, there's everything you think of. But unless the person grows, unless he makes a purpose out of improving himself, unless he stops hating people, unless he stops gossip, unless he stops chiseling, dishonesty, unless he stops trying to make an unreasonable profit on his merchandise, unless these things change, all the illusions in the world will not help.